Hello and welcome to today's RealCom webinar. I'm Chuck Nyswanger, your RealCom host for today's topic, Smart Building Tech Revolutionizing Efficiency and Cost-Effective Futures. Thank you for tuning in to the live session or viewing this as a recording. These, quote, smart building technology discussions are moving much more closer to smarter outcomes, and I think you'll get some of that, especially ones that utilize multiple data sources to create a more holistic building intelligence solution. So you'll hear more about that from our excellent panelists. Before we get started, let me go over a few housekeeping items to help you have a great webinar experience. Thank you to our live attendees. We do encourage you to use the Q&A box on the bottom of your screen to submit questions and comments. People generally have a better experience on a webinar when they are an active participant. So we do encourage you to send questions and comments in, and we'll try to get to all of those during the webinar. If we don't, we'll follow up with you once the event is concluded. In the handout section, you'll find more detailed information about our panelists. Their bios are all included there. The entire slide deck presentation is there. So if someone speeds over something with it's got a lot of information and they can't possibly cover it all, you'll be able to see it there. Plus, we do have a bonus video from River South. You'll find that in the handout section. For the best webinar experience, we do recommend that you close out any of your internet applications, especially streaming videos that take up a lot of bandwidth. We have a great panel, so you don't want to miss any of that discussion. If you do experience technical issues with connectivity, sound, or video quality, the best thing to do is disconnect and click on the webinar link again. You can also email Ian at ithompson, that's ithompson, at realcom.com for help during the event. But don't worry, you won't miss anything since you'll receive a link to the entire webinar recording later today. And I've included my email in case you're watching this as a recording and you think of a question you would have liked to ask the panel. Go ahead and send it to me and I'll send it to our panelists and they can get back with you. This educational webinar is supported by our outstanding sponsors. That includes Johnson Controls and FM Systems together. And Johnson Controls is a global leader in smart, healthy, and sustainable buildings with a history of more than 140 years of innovation. Johnson Controls delivers the blueprint of the future for industries such as commercial real estate, healthcare, data centers, and far beyond that. MRI Software's comprehensive and flexible technology platform, coupled with an open and connected ecosystem, meets the unique needs of real estate businesses from property level management and accounting to investment modeling to analytics and global commercial and residential markets. Tossiebox provides the platform to optimize and engage your essential use cases needed to run your business. Securely connect your applications to your building management system in seconds and secure your critical infrastructure with the Tossiebox platform. LinkSpring develops, manufactures, distributes, and supports edge-to-enterprise solutions that create smarter buildings, smarter equipment, smarter applications. The company's solutions enable users to realize outcomes, efficiencies, and value from their operational data. LinkSpring is at the forefront of moving buildings from smart to smarter. And on that note, let's see a quick promotional video from LinkSpring.
LinkSpring's edge-to-enterprise for enterprise and multi-sites is a turnkey smart building solution that connects, accesses, and translates operational and facility data from devices and equipment into actionable information. Information that can save energy, increase efficiency, and reduce operating costs while maintaining a higher level of comfort for occupants. The edge-to-enterprise solution consists of hardware and software combined with engineering, deployment, and professional services. It's everything you need to deploy and experience the value of a smart facility enterprise, including connectivity, integration, interoperability, automation, command and control, data access and normalization, analytics, and cloud services.
We are very grateful for all the contributions by these vendors to our industry, to RealCom specifically, and to helping us educate our viewers in sessions just like these. I do recommend taking a look at each of the vendors' websites and scheduling an on-site visit to learn exactly how they can help you achieve your business goals. Let me bring on our moderator, Nada Sutik. She's the VP of Sustainability, Innovation, and National Programs with Epic Investment Systems. Welcome, Nada.
Hi there. Thanks, Chuck. Thank you for that introduction. How are you?
Hey, real quick, I think we've got a pretty good audience sample size. Let's run a quick poll and see where they're coming from. So if you don't mind in the audience, if you take, we'll take about 30 seconds just to give us an idea of your position in the company, one that most closely matches what you do there. It may not be perfect, but it'll certainly give us an idea if we want to redirect some of the discussion in one way or the other. All right, anytime you're ready, Ian, we can take a look at those results. There you go, pretty good mix. Over half the audience from various components of the industry, including 1/4 from the executive suite. So Nada, you've got a good audience, you've got a good panel, so I'm gonna get out of your way and let you go with it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Chuck. Welcome to everybody. Thanks again for joining us today. I'll tell you very briefly about me. So as Chuck said, I do head up Sustainability Innovation National Programs at EPIC. I've been in the real estate industry for over 15 years in Canada and worked in sustainability, worked in national programs. I also worked in property management for a number of years. So I really have a good sense of that day-to-day life for our folks on the ground. And a little bit about EPIC just really briefly as well. So we're a property manager, asset manager, and an investment manager for institutional clients. We do have a few assets in the US in a multifamily fund, but we primarily operate in Canada and in Canadian markets. And I'm based in Toronto. So our asset classes that we're involved in are office and industrial, as well as multifamily and retail. A lot of my time and my team's time really focuses on supporting those operational sides on the property management side. So more in the office and industrial there. We do have a great group for you today on this webinar. So we've got industry leaders to talk about how they're making their buildings and portfolios more intelligent and really delivering outcomes and results, and several key vendor partners as well in the industry to share their perspectives and how they're helping their clients achieve desired outcomes. So let me set the stage for us a little bit. Efficiency and cost-effective futures. So what does that mean? What are we talking about? I will say for me, when I hear the word efficiency, my first thought is usually energy efficiency. That's a little too narrow for our conversation today. We're going to be a little bit broader. We will talk about energy efficiency opportunities and building optimization in terms of operational controls, of course, but also about efficiency of people. So are we giving our people the right tools so they can be efficient in their jobs? You know, it's one of the drivers that I think is always in the background when we're thinking about how we run our buildings. What can we automate for people? Where can AI help with those tasks? And you know, can I get people to be focused and spending their time on higher value work? You know, the work that perhaps AI can't do. You know, what are the other ways that we can drive efficiency? So driving productivity. And ultimately, you know, I think what we're all trying to do in running our business is like, how am I gonna get more bang for my buck? And you know, when we apply that to running a portfolio of buildings, you know, that's sort of the topics that we'll be able to get into today. You know, including can the tenant or the occupant experience be better? You know, do we make their day more efficient, more effective, more engaged at the building? So why does efficiency matter? Coming back to energy costs and really, I think any input cost, they're generally going up. They're pretty much always, I think, going up. On the sustainability side, we certainly see, you know, initiatives and directives. So whether that's a corporate target, an investor's target, a tenant's target, you know, or something else, we do certainly have regulations. So obviously in New York, you've got Local Law 97. That's putting a significant cost on emitting greenhouse gas emissions. So anything that you can do to reduce consumption of grid electricity, steam, on-site combustion, that can be a really big win in that market. Those fines are significant. They're very motivating. And I think it's making a lot of business cases make sense in a way that maybe they couldn't have before. In California, you've got the Building Energy Savings Act. So setting the stage for developing, you know, performance standards for large commercial buildings as well. Of course, we've got our whole macroeconomic environment. And then when it comes to people, I think we're also impacted by demographics. So we've got also the current shortage of sort of skilled labor, as well as, you know, what's going to be coming. So I came across a study recently that that just touched on, it was from a couple of years ago, but it touched on at that time, the US had over 17 million skilled technical workers. But was expected to still be short of about 3.4 million workers qualified for the skilled technical positions by 2022. So that was referring to more the STEM type positions. So we'll need those to sort of underlie a lot of the technology work. But there are also shortages in construction, general contracting. The Association of General Contractors reports that 89% of firms have a hard time finding workers to hire, and 61% have delayed project schedules because of workforce shortages. So I think that's pretty significant. Building operations, and broadly, I would suggest building management, is unlikely to be immune from those types of stats. So I think, as we know, baby boomers are retiring. Some already have, many still will. And we will, I think, also see, many that will stay in the workforce, perhaps not full time, but they're not likely to be your building operator. So again, I think you have to automate the simple stuff, get the most out of the people you have, get the most out of the buildings and the systems that you have. So how do you do that efficiently? And how does that ultimately deliver from a value perspective? I think it's about creating the big opportunity to be really cost effective. Okay, so let's get into it. With us today, and their bios are posted. We'll do little intros along the way, just so we know who's here. Vineet Sinha from Johnson Controls, Jerry Reeves from Tozzybox, Gary Perbrick from MRI Software, Byron Lopez from Kilroy, and Eric Heron from Stream Realty Partners. So we'll start with Eric. Eric's going to join us and talk about River South, a great building in Austin that you've maybe heard about before. And he's going to share a little bit on what's worked well, a few things that maybe didn't work, and some of the learnings along the way. Over to you, Eric.
Thanks, Nana. I appreciate the introduction. My name is Eric Heron. I am the Managing Director of Development and Construction for Stream Realty. Here to give you kind of an update today. Many of you probably have seen information about River South. River South is a building that we developed with our partner Quadreal here in Austin, Texas, in the south central waterfront of Austin, just south of the CBD. It is a 375,000 foot office building, class AA. We delivered it in 22, kind of midway to through 22, and we're awarded the IBCon award for smartest office building in 21. So we were excited about that. Since then, we went on to become Texas's first Smart Score Platinum building in the state, and we're also Wired Score Platinum. Really, the goal today is now, whether or not you've seen any of our previous presentations on the building, give you kind of a brief, tell you a little bit about what we planned and what we did, but really to give you an update on how it's going, right? We've now been living in the building for almost 2 years. We are at a point where we're 98% leased, building out the last about 120,000 feet right now, probably fully occupied by the end of the year. It's been a success story from an investment standpoint, done very well leasing against other assets in the market, most of which are not smart. And so there's a story to be told there, I think. Briefly, go a slide forward here. Strategic drivers for the project. You've heard these before on lots of projects, but reduce energy and cost and enhance the experience for the users of the building. And I think that kind of goes both to tenants, but also, visitors to the building and the users of the building from a standpoint of the operators. Improve utilization of spaces and the amenities and things that we've provided. Improve efficiency. That's efficiency of energy, and it's efficiency of use of the space. Mitigate risk. Talk about a few use cases that were focused there. But the bottom line is really number six, increase revenue. We're merchant developers. Our goal is to exit this product. And it all kind of comes down to whether or not you can point to any of the money you spend on a smart building platform to increase rental rates and or tenant retention. So here's the use cases we started with. Just brief is we integrated 21 building systems. About 1,100 pieces of equipment are connected to our smart platform. Our master systems integrator and our operating system are with Code Labs, but we we basically, you know, started here, and these were kind of the use cases we were focusing on. And I highlighted these in different colors based on how I feel like they did. And we can talk about any of those that you guys want to, and please ask questions at the end. I won't spend the whole time going through this, but converged operating system, UUI, you know, the code platform, tenant submetering is a big one. We're the first in our market to really kind of take it to the level that we've taken it. Our goal when we came out with this building was to be able to give tenants, each tenant, an electrical bill at the end of every month with their actual use within their premises. We realized there's no getting around having to charge kind of a pro rata share of the common spaces in the building, but our goal was really to get to the point, not only plug loads and light loads, but really the hard part of this is trying to get the mechanical systems accounted for. If one tenant calls for air on a Saturday, we can monitor all the pieces of equipment that had to turn on that in order to deliver that air. If two people at the same time on the same floor ask for it, we have to be able to divvy that up. So we're still in the process of that one. So that one's yellow. Mobile app for tenant services has been well received by tenants. I think you can point to our leasing. It was a great tool in leasing to show people what they can do with our tenant app. Operationalized BIM is one we've just kind of put on the side, right? A digital twin of the building we struggled finding a platform there and have not come back to it. It's become less important in our minds. Been focused on you know, basically anything that we could do to get tenants and really think that's something we do day two. Dock driveway management, work order integration. The work order integration is in progress. It's blue here. We're still basically that really had to do with our service provider that Stream uses and getting them to play ball and integrate with us. Smart parking, rainwater and condensate. It's a very green building. We capture all the water. And so monitoring the tanks and how full they are. Occupancy data collection, I would say, is probably one of the all-stars of the whole process. You know, the sensors, which in our case, are the Xandar sensors, counting people. There's so many use cases that point directly to knowing how people are using your building and where they are. And I think really there's going to be a lot more to come. So I think the data value of that data down the road will have a lot more use cases that we'll point to and add to our total later. EV charging. Main reason that one's yellow is just we haven't utilized it till its fullest extent at this point. Intelligent security, a digital kiosks, occupancy comfort. So we have indoor air quality sensors throughout the building. That's been something that's really been well received by tenants. We give them visibility through a tenant dashboard into those metrics. And we kind of do it in a way where it's a little simplified, but it's a good day. It's a better day. You know, in the building from an air quality standpoint. Bike valet, we're still don't have it up and running, really mainly because of occupancy and interest from tenants. Smart lockers, something I probably wouldn't do again. It seems to be more trouble than it's worth. But it is integrated with our access control system at this point and working. Leak detection, good example of this. We had a law firm tenant in our building that had a leak at 4 o'clock on Friday. Our engineers knew about it before they did, and handled it and dealt with it. You know, got the leak fixed without any damage. It would have probably happened in a typical building without leak detection all night. We could have had a flood in the building. Could have done a lot of damage in a very high finished space. Smart bathroom accessories. You know, it's really hard to justify the value there, but we do have smart toilet paper sensors throughout the building, and the idea is that you change roles when they're empty, not when it's the time to go around to that floor. So that's basically it. You know, I'm happy to answer any questions anybody has about any of that. Again, please feel free to reach out to me as well after the meeting here if you guys have questions.
That's awesome. Thanks, Eric. So I think you know, I'll pick up on a couple of things. I think one of the things you said sort of early on there as you're getting started was, you know, that you guys are almost at almost fully leased at this point. And it just makes me kind of remember, it was probably 10, 15 years ago, first having some of these, you know, kind of smart building type conferences. And one of the kind of phrases that often came out was like, step one is like the smartest building is one that's fully leased. So, you know, I think that's at the end of the day, it's like that is still the core of the business. So I wanted to just pick up on, and then you kind of talked a little bit, it was interesting, like some of the use cases that you identified were like maybe more trouble than they're worth. So you mentioned smart lockers. And is that just in, I guess, in that office context, not as necessary given the amount of effort you guys had to put in?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, let me address your first question or your first comment about fully leased. It's really hard to point, you know, to one thing in a building and say, well, we were smart, so we leased first, right? And in Austin, we have a ton of sublease space on the market, as I'm sure everybody's fighting in their markets. But it's a success story from, you know, last year of leasing office buildings in Austin has been very tough. We just signed a few months ago, we signed a 98,000 foot tenant, which is a high tech tenant. I think it played a part in that. And so it showed very well from a leasing perspective during the tours, showing them how these things work, using your iPhone or your iWatch to call the elevator or to get into tenant spaces or get in the building. Explaining kind of a day in the life of a tenant here through using these tools was really great. Your other comment, there's some things that, you know, one of the things I wanted to highlight is like when you're on the forefront and you start working in some of the pieces of our technology, the companies didn't make it. Like a good example is access control, right? We had an access control vendor that had a great product. But they were the only one with that product. We went with them. They didn't make it. The company went out of business, and we had to then turn around and use something else. So we learned a lot about things like that during the process. But really, it's really just kind of fine tuning things now, and it's been a longer process than we expected. But definitely, it's exciting to see it work.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're gonna have to move on. I've got more questions for you. We'll save them till the end with the panel. But I'll maybe just tease a couple. Interested, I think, to hear more about, so I know you mentioned leak detection delivering I think a lot of value, so maybe you can think about what's your favorite use case in terms of something that you guys have delivered, and I mean we can hear about that at the end of the session.
Great.
Awesome. Thanks, Eric. Okay, so we're gonna shift over. So Eric's taken us on a bit of a deep dive for, you know, one asset with River South. We're going to bring in Byron Lopez with Kilroy Realty. And Byron, we're going to talk a little bit more about starting at that portfolio view and kind of thinking a little bit more top down as opposed to asset level. So let's start with maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and about Kilroy and your portfolio.
Yeah, thank you, Nada. My name is, as you mentioned, Byron Lopez. I'm the Director of Operational Technology for Kilroy Realty. And I like to say that we oversee everything from irrigation to the cloud, right? Technology cloud, so everything that's in the building, anything that is powering the asset, making sure that we are providing services, operational efficiency, technology, and being able to deliver a building that has that forward-looking space, but also is covered by cybersecurity. So as we look at how we wanted to build Kilroy as a portfolio, where do we want to take the company? Where do we want to put our buildings? We are a developer REIT, right? We develop our own buildings, we manage our own buildings, we acquire. So Kilroy is very active on the West Coast, everywhere from Seattle to San Diego. And in between, we have properties in Austin as well. And we are really in off assets, right? Primarily commercial. We have resi, we have some retail, but our bread and butter is, you know, high-end class A commercial properties in those spaces.
Awesome. So now when you're looking at sort of that portfolio level and thinking about some of the technology you want to bring in, like what's your approach when you're looking across the portfolio?
For us, it was really finding the standard and where did we want to have Kilroy set the tone, right? As you know, we've mentioned Kilroy won the Digi a couple of years back for the smartest commercial portfolio in RealCom, right? So we have a standard that we'd like to set. And we wanted to see a technology stack that would help us lease the space, but also operate the space more efficiently, not just for, you know, our tenants to be able to come in and enjoy the space that they're in, but also for our teams, right? We have big property management teams. We manage our own properties. We have in-house engineering, in-house security, right, that our teams are responsible for. So the idea was to bring in a OT team or an IT team, part of the OT of the IT department, to help establish some of the policies and procedures, help figure out where were the common issues and goals for the company, right? To make sure that security was talking to engineering and sustainability and also to legal, and that IT was providing a standard that we can use for technology, not just deploying hardware or infrastructure for the sake of technology, but making sure that it had an impact on what we were doing with the buildings.
Right. No, that's awesome. And I think so important to kind of to think through that process around not just the technology, but what is the business need, right? Because I think getting your business users together to understand, you know, what's their day-to-day like, and then how could you help, you know, so critical. I mean, I think we've, I'm sure with the folks on the webinar with us today, we've all been through the process of somebody starting with a technology and going, where can I make this fit? And that usually doesn't work out all that well.
Yeah, we established an innovation council, right? Kind of what we call it internally, of our heads of those departments saying what are their challenges, what are the common goals, and how can we solve that issue, right? Especially during COVID, there was a few different things that were coming at all of us, right? All of us property managers, teams were saying, we need cleaning, we need this, we need disinfecting lights, we need cameras. And we really sat back and said, where are we going, not just for the 2 years or the 3 years of the pandemic, but long-term, 5, 10, 15 years,
right?
Where do we want our buildings to be then? Not just to address the challenge that is now.
Yeah. And so I guess, how did you, so I mean, kind of pulled that team together. Can you share, like, what were some of those initial outcomes, maybe a couple of examples, like, that you were looking for technology to deliver for your teams?
Sure. I mean, initially, the big conversation, I think, with everybody was cybersecurity and the BMS, right? HVAC controls, that was kind of everybody's, you know, headlight. But as we started to talk to the teams, we found the challenges were further from there, right? Security had some concerns with cameras and equipment and aging equipment, right? Sustainability wanted to make sure that we had better data and reporting. Engineering, right? They are focused on the BAS, but they manage everything in the building, right? From irrigation to lighting controls to, so we really opened this can of worms and said, what is really happening there? Where can we provide technology solutions for the betterment of the property? And how can we take what we have currently in-house and either retrofit it, upgrade it, get it to a standard that we determine to be a Kilroy base, right? We know that we have multiple versions of a camera system that can do some sort of technology, but there is a standard base that it should at least do this amount. I know Eric mentioned water detection, right? We've had a long-standing water detection project at Kilroy for even longer than I've been here. I've been here close to 9 years, and Kilroy has been doing that back when it was on POTS lines and phone lines, right? You would get water detection. The system will use the phone line to call out a call tree. We digitally upgraded all that for part of our stack for the entire portfolio. It's part of our, you know, life cycle of our risk management. And that was something that was brought up to us, but not by the operation side, but our efficiency and risk management side. How can we leverage technology to make sure that we detect leaks, to make sure that we are proactive in protecting our spaces with tenants? So those are things that we went out to the organization and found the use cases and then married those together. Security needs to know how many people are in the building. Engineering likes to know how many people are in the building. Why are we not using common technology for that? So identifying those solutions here.
Right. Yeah. And it sounds like this part of this initial discussion maybe also broke down some silos.
Yeah, no, it definitely did, right? Because we were able to bring the company, we're very open, right? We're one Kilroy team, right? But sometimes people get stuck in their little bubbles of the operation side, and we might not think of what the other user needs, or we might not think of how we're impacting somebody. If, you know, we deploy mobile credentials and our, you know, engineering team doesn't know that that door now is getting used, right? So we have to think of, like, or those roll-up gates are coming into the parking lot, right? So we're now doing more cycles and roll-up gates. We're doing more hardware usage of equipment in the building. So we need to make sure that if we are providing a solution for one partner in the building, we're also doing it for the rest of the property. So ensuring that we're also planning for the future and looking at our costs of refreshment, or how are we going to upgrade the equipment? Where do we start planning now for equipment that we know we need in a year, two or three, and putting that together as an efficiency.
Yeah, and really thinking about just sort of the impacts and, you know, potential unintended consequences, right? And getting ahead of those,
right? Of course. Yeah, I
for
mean,
sure.
and leveraging the portfolio, right? You have the economy, the efficiency of the economy, right? How do you make sure that when you go to a vendor and say you're not just getting one killer building, two killer buildings, you're getting the larger part of the portfolio, you're getting
Right.
120 buildings, that cost is not going to reduce because we've partnered with you. So now my team knows that there is a cost to that camera that is this much. There's a cost to that key card reader that's this much, and we can deploy that across the board, and we can have that as part of our long-term planning for costs.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. And then you said you kind of, you set that standard for Kilroy assets. So really identifying the baseline, what are those minimum requirements that you expect for all of your assets? How do you kind of think about sort of different options or, looking at, okay, so here's that baseline that we've set, and then sort of going beyond and continuing to, up that baseline.
Yeah, I mean, like we always say, every building is its own snowflake, right? Every building has its own challenge, its own requirements. What works on one site may not necessarily work somewhere else. So we continuously evaluate our partnerships with our technology partners, right? How do we move forward? This week I am at the Niagara Summit looking at, BMS equipment, infrastructure, JACES, all that technology. Last week we were at our security conference looking at security equipment, cloud solutions, camera systems. So that's part of our ongoing process, working with our teams as they bring technology to our table and vetting it, right? One of the big pieces is the cyber stack behind the system. We need to make sure that the cyber piece of the technology is there, because as much as, it might have all the bells and whistles, if the cyber protection, the infrastructure, the network is not there for them to be able to support our requirements, then it will be a non-starter. But we were able to set up a what we call the killer matrix, right, where we have the standards of equipment that we want to use, and then evaluate every year or 2 years and saying, this worked out. Is there a newer version of that system? Is there a newer version model of that technology? Are they adding new analytics? So making sure that we continuously look at the market and not just say it's not set it and forget it anymore, right? It
Right.
used to be that you put in technology in a building, you leave it for 15, 20 years, and you come back and yeah, it's still working. But
Yeah.
now it's, you have to refresh it. You have to, there's operational costs now that is associated with it that, so you have to make sure that you keep that in focus as you deploy technology going forward.
Yeah, for sure. And so you've been there 9 years. Some of the leak detection efforts have been there longer than you. I'm sure there was some technology that was there before you as well.
Oh.
But there's like the nature of technology, right? And like you were just saying, like you've always got to be doing that upgraded. Like things are always changing.
Of course, yeah.
And there's a lot of people involved. Can you tell us a little bit about just sort of change management and how you sort of start to get alignment there? Because I think,
Sure.
like that's a tough part.
I think the biggest piece is understanding the challenges that individuals have, right? The challenge that my head of, physical security is different than my head of engineering, right? But there are common goals that we can solve together. So really sitting down and talking to them as what do you really need, right? We came with the idea that technology is not going to take over your job. I don't want to be, I'm not a chiller guy. I'm not a VAV controls guy. My job is to help make sure that that VAV controls guy is that industrial control vendor has whatever he needs from a technology standpoint to do his job efficiently. And if that means that we're now in charge of taking over the workstations or providing servers, providing the networking, providing the switching, the cabling, and that makes it easier for them, having them understand that process and sitting down with them. Most times it's, going out to lunch and saying, what do you need? This is what we can provide, making sure that they feel comfortable. And sometimes it is daunting, right? Many of these operators have been in a building for 30, 40, 50 years, right? Some people I
Right.
know guys who have been there for longer than I've been alive, and it's their baby. So
Yeah.
bringing in technology into the stack is a little bit scary, but once you start talking to them about what can it do, it can make you more efficient. You can do this remotely from home. We can provide better services to our tenant. Oh, by the way, those calls that you have for after hours HVAC, we now have an automation system for it so that nobody's bugging you, right? The tenant now knows how to select after hours HVAC, know what they're going to pay, know the rate. It goes into the system. You can say, yeah, I approve it or self-approve, but you no longer have to do that at, 11 p.m. when the tenant's
Right.
saying, I need something to be on at 4 in the morning. There's an automation for that now. So it gives them a little bit more of a tools in their tool set to be able to be more effective and focus on what they believe is a more useful need. Utility metering. It used to be that you had engineers going around every meter, just taking a picture, doing the
Yep,
manual
reading them.
calculation, putting it into an Excel, doing the, we now do that automation as
Yeah.
part of our system, right? We deploy smart meters, we work with a partner, they take all that information, the engineers validate it, because we still need that validation process. But then it goes out and spits out a report and an invoice. And no longer are the engineers having to walk everywhere. So
yeah, no, that's awesome. I'm going to have to move us on, but I think there were some really good nuggets in here just in terms of, you know, kind of some of that stuff that I was talking about at the front end, right? Like, how do we make our people more efficient and get rid of that boring stuff that, you know, was easy, but maybe they'd rather do something else, right? Rather than walking around reading meters. So thank you so much, Byron. I think this was really enlightening. Looking forward to chatting a little bit more at the end. So before we, before we move on to our next presenter, we're going to see a quick video from one of our sponsors of today's session from MRI.
All it takes is a single vision to spark a new reality. Visions can have a mind of their own, shifting, growing, and changing entirely. Small notions turn into big ideas, and when determination meets the right technology, those big ideas turn into absolute game changers. To the visionaries who not only see what could be, but have the courage to bring their vision to life, you are the ones driving us to the future. Adapting to today's challenges to fulfill the promise of tomorrow. And when you're equipped with the tools and technologies that bring tomorrow closer to today, just imagine what you will envision next. MRI Software. Unleash the visionary in you.
Great. Thank you. And with that, let me introduce Gary Perbrick, Industry Principal with MRI Software. Over to you, Gary.
Hi, Nada. Thanks for that. As we've just seen from the video, we're here to help revolutionize efficiency for cost-effective futures by leveraging data to help track and reduce energy, create productive environments tailored to tenants' needs, and use AI-driven insights to understand building tenants. I've been here for 8 years in the FM, the energy and the on location for footfall analytics sort of division. And we've been trying to drive these efficiency savings and the connectivity that we've already heard from Byron and from Eric earlier. So for us, we've got slides have gone a bit. There we go. No, we go upwards, backwards, backwards, backwards. There's a bit of latency on this, I think. So smart buildings, what do we mean? So for us, we thrive. We believe that communities, you know, should be well connected. We do this by empowering our clients by offering flexible and configurable solutions and by providing the connectivity through our platforms that allows clients like yourselves to bring together the data and multiple sources to drive the insights and actions quickly. The changing use of buildings and office space has been drastic over the last few years, as we all know. So flexible workplace models have introduced new pressures, but they've also brought those new opportunities to evaluate the property data that we've been collecting for years and using that information to make smarter, more timely decisions for service delivery, energy consumption, and overall cost management. I want to share with you a couple of client stories where they've been putting their data to work in hyper-connected ways, driving new insights and value. So, smart buildings, right? As we've heard from Eric and Byron, you know, we need to seamlessly integrate our multiple data sources to leverage and drive actions, right? We need to find those, those nuggets of novel relationships and insights to give us the data. And we need to analyze the AI or use AI to drive efficiencies and streamline our processes. That is key for doing any sort of work in a smart building. So how do we do that? Well, you need to think about the data sets within your organization and how they may complement one another, but they may well not yet be integrated. We've got three complementary data sets that we think work well together. We have the facilities management data set, such as your work orders, your asset maintenance, the amenity usage, the tenant surveys. This data provides the property managers with the valuable information that optimize operations and improve efficiency for your properties. But it's important to have the ability to react quickly using event-driven data that I think is key here. And you need that from disparate data sources to extend asset life, reduce maintenance costs, or initiate a work order. We also have the energy usage data set and tracking the consumption of energy within the facility, which could be electricity, gas, water, and other resources. This helps the facility manager identify opportunities for energy efficiency improvements and cost savings. One of our clients had challenges where they were trying to obtain real-time access to all their energy-related data in a single system. They had trouble navigating disparate reporting frameworks and also illustrating those results effectively to all of their shareholders, which were, you know, a multitude of shareholders and stakeholders, efficiently. What we did is our solution gave them that real-time data on a user-friendly dashboard, and that was easily shared for optimized visibility across all of their stakeholders. We also leveraged alarms to identify problem areas and track remediation results over time and initiate those work orders to take action. Those results have seen us save, or that client save, over $15 million to date, which is significant. So for the third arm, alongside the FM and the energy, if we imagine adding in the foot traffic data and, you know, this traffic data helping us understand the occupancy, the customer demographics, the path of movement through the property and the dwell where people stay and hold, that gives us a unique data set that helps teams to evaluate the location performance and optimize tenant and landlord analytics. You can see that overlaying these data sets can provide powerful insights, allowing you to make better informed decisions to create productive environments, which are tailored to tenant needs while you're managing costs. So, has that gone on? Oh, there we go. So the analyzing data, I think we've gone on one slide too many here. This is jumping about somewhat, guys, I believe. The second component of the smart building I want to talk about is how do we uncover those data sets and then analyze them to build those novel relationships and insights. We believe in our own tech set, same as most tech businesses. And so across the global MRI offices, we've introduced our foot traffic analytics and our energy management systems to allow us to make smarter decisions. Both these data sets that have been collected for many years have been providing important information to our leadership. As we combine these data sets and started to ask different questions, we've been able to uncover opportunities to cut operational costs, improve sustainability with real-time occupancy-based energy usage. By pairing these solutions together, we're able to identify usage patterns, optimize the space utilization, reduce utility costs, and accelerate our progress towards our ESG targets. And this has seen us save over $20,000 alone in one of our offices. Not only has this enhanced our operational efficiency, but it's also improved the employee experience, promoting productivity and flexibility in the workplace. So obviously we all know about AI and how it's used in the world these days. It's prevalent across society, and what we use AI for is to understand the patterns that make us better informed decisions and drive these efficiencies in the process, all improved, you know, all aimed at improving our levels of stakeholder transparency. For instance, if you understand the occupancy within a property, and in fact, when people visit that property, it allows us to predict what's going to happen going forward. We use visual-based analytics solutions that leverage excess capacity that sits within the security sort of system. And this, for instance, can produce granular data, which gives us the overall occupancy, specific floor usage by hour. Overall space optimization helps understand the data trends within the building. The synergies that then exist by adding in the energy management and facility management solutions allow us for those automated maintenance workflows, the process improvements, and the building usage strategies that can be implemented. Typical clients have faced difficulties when they've been using basic systems, and those challenges that arrive from that include tracking the progress of work orders to completion, a lack of granular usable data, and processes and standards that were not in place to ensure data was captured correctly. By implementing MRI Angus, that helped one of our clients improve efficiency, achieve 100% data transparency, and effectively go paperless. It also brought for them drastic improvements in service levels, efficiencies, and accountability. So, final slide, you'll be glad to know. It's clear that smart buildings today have made big leap forwards in prioritizing connectivity of their data. Having the ability to converge data sets drives quicker results, ensures building operations remain competitive, and interoperability being critical, facilitated by adopting open and connected technologies and incorporating data capture automation. But it's important that having data is only one side of the equation. Too much data can lead to pressure to ensure that a use is found for this excess data. Integrated architecture and AI automation means doing more with less natively, but you need to imagine that automation is the enabler but does need correct control to ensure compliance. But ultimately, it's vital that all stakeholders, including tenants, have the right data at their fingertips to drive those cost efficiencies and deliver a superior building experience. So back to you, Nada.
Thanks so much, Gary. That was great. Good to get that bit of an overview of just the way you're bringing different sets of data together so that your customers are able to, you know, ultimately make better decisions, right? I mean, I think that's what we're all trying to do.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. We don't have a ton of time for questions at this moment, so we will catch you at the end. And with that, I will go on to Jerry from TozzyBox. And so Jerry Reeves, VP of Technology at TozzyBox, is joining us. Jerry, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and about TozzyBox?
Yeah, absolutely, Donna. Thank you very much. Yes, Jerry Reeves, TozzyBox, Vice President of Technology. I've been working with TozzyBox for about 8 years now, and TozzyBox provides the infrastructure, the backbones for a bunch of different operational spaces. Building automation is one of our major verticals, but also industrial automation, including water, wastewater, oil and gas, and other critical industries. And so many of the panelists today have already mentioned some of the areas where we play, which includes cybersecurity, connectivity, and really the infrastructure and compute that underpins a lot of these technologies that help us make these efficiency improvements and make these automation improvements that we're all striving for. So my focus today is really to give you a perspective from us on what we're seeing in the industry, on how we're helping customers and the industry as a whole get to data-driven decisions faster. Okay. I think, you know, Eric, in Eric's presentation earlier, it was very important where he said, look, I got to bullet number six, and it was about making revenue, right? And at the end of the day, we're all in business together to drive revenue and reduce costs and make the building automation industry as profitable as possible. And a lot of that is based on these data-driven decisions. So I'm going to jump into some of this. I'm actually thrilled about where I am in the lineup of the presentation, because Eric, Gary, and Byron had some very key points that I'm going to kind of touch on as we work through a few slides here. So, you know, let's talk about infrastructure. You know, what is that in terms of our space here? You know, and why does TozzyBox have a place? Well, you know, it's the data and where it's located is essential to making it available for these data-driven decisions. You know, Gary's got this fantastic software with MRI, but without any data inside of it, it doesn't provide the value that it could, right? If Byron is not able to move the data from his portfolio of buildings to the people that need to make the decisions, he can't make those efficiency changes or those operational changes that he needs to best optimize his portfolio, right? Eric's awesome new building, okay, there in Austin, has connections with all sorts of different services providers and value-added vendors. But if he's not able to leverage that data, get it to the customers, get it to management, right? It's really just a glitzy box. So having critical infrastructure available to move this data about is essential. So some of the things that we've seen, and yes, of course, it's all about the data, right? But we've seen an explosion lately with the advent of IP controllers, right? And everybody's like, yeah, we've had IP controllers around for a while. I'm sure, You know, Eric and Byron have several of them throughout their buildings and their portfolios. But what we find with IP-based controls is the amount of data is growing exponentially, right? So now when Gary's building his software for MRI, right, he has so many more inputs to leverage within his software, right? When Byron's looking to manage his overall Kilroy portfolio, there's so many different aspects that he can tweak and pull and push to make changes to his environment. IP-based controls has really brought in a new era of smart buildings as we know them. The trick is can we get the data from these controls, from these sensors, to where it needs to be? And also, can we organize that data such that we can make those decisions quickly for the next level of efficiency or optimization, right? The other part that we're seeing, right, is building data specialists. I think Eric mentioned earlier that he and his crew have been working with Code Labs, a group that we've worked with in the past as well. Building data specialists, right? People who've put together the applications, the algorithms, the specialized looks and dynamic changes on that data, a lot of that's built in the cloud, right? But how do you move the sensor data from the actual building on location on that campus to that cloud location? And how do you move it efficiently? And how do you move it, most importantly, securely, right? More data, more traffic, more bandwidth, but it all needs to be in an envelope of security, right? So that we are going to be successful in this endeavor long term, all right? One thing that I also think is going to be very interesting, and I'm seeing it more and more evolving as a trend, is, okay, we have this building portfolio, we have these systems, we have a little bit of maybe control and automation of the building itself, and now maybe we engage a cloud provider to provide some specialty analytics or something of that nature. But I think one of the things that we're finding, and maybe to one of your points, Nada, is, you know, how do we use emerging technologies to become more efficient? How do we use emerging technologies to make some of these more routine computations or decisions faster? And I think what we're going to start to find is we're going to have not only our cloud compute for building decisions and management, but we're also going to see some of this push back down to the building and having in-building compute for specific AI and machine learning algorithms and models down at the building itself. Again, when you have these two different locations, on-site or on-prem, as well as at the cloud, how do you move the data securely and efficiently to each of these locations so that you can make those decisions or use these algorithms to your advantage? Again, connectivity, security, and compute are all essential as we use more and more data to further enhance our building profiles. So some of the obstacles that we've seen when people are trying to use data further within their portfolios is, you know, how do you build a solution with siloed providers? Back to Eric's big slide where he had the big mosaic of all the different solutions he has in his building. That's no small task. How do you get, and Eric, I'll pick on your favorite one, how do you get the lockers technology to work with your access control technology and make all those players, one, talk together, get the data where it needs to work together, right? And then making sure that the controls, algorithms, and decisions are working the way you want it so you have that world-class experience, right? A lot of times we will see our cloud applications come and promote, and you'll see them at trade shows. Hey, we've developed this new either energy management application, or hey, we're very specific to buildings on coastal shores, right? And we have these algorithms that deal with humidity and wind and that sort of thing. But they don't tell you how you get the building data into their algorithms. They leave that up to you, right? And that's where TazyBox and others can come in and help provide that connectivity and security, right? Because a cloud application without the data doesn't bring much value, right? Now, we're going to hear from Vineet here right behind me as well. But the automation space down at the building level is also a key area, right? I already mentioned earlier that IP-based controls are acquiring more sensor data and pumping more data into these systems. But the automation itself is becoming more intelligent, becoming more useful, right? And so while the automation can create all that source data, right, how do we direct it and where it needs to go? Okay, now Vineet's going to have his own solutions and that sort of thing, but you may find out in the industry there is a whole portfolio of different options. And I think Byron mentioned that every building's different. Not every building can use the same system, so he may have to pick and choose throughout an entire portfolio of what to do with the data that is sourced from the automation. I want to spend a couple seconds here on connections and security, because I will say in a lot of cases, this is one of the biggest challenges that we have, right? Our building operators, our system managers are going to these shows and they're like, hey, I want to use MRI software. And I want to use it across my portfolio of 50 buildings, right? And I'm using Jotham Controls and Honeywell and everybody and LinkSpring and everybody throughout my buildings. How do we get it all working together? Oh, that's IT's job. They're going to figure it out. And next thing you know, we're 6 months from now and we haven't connected anything, right? It's important, and I see it in Eric's presentation. I see it definitely with Byron's. Having someone that has the vision and is empowered to take the lead really helps overcome the connectivity and security challenges that interrupt our ability to move data to where we can make better decisions. So I think that brings me to the end. I have one click, not out of time for a quick example.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, cool.
Examples are always good.
Okay, so look, you know, a building owner wants to use a cloud-based fault management system or building optimization system, right, across their fleet. You know, how do they bring that data to the cloud? You know, how do they put together the application interfaces for whether it's their users, their property managers, their owners, right? Are they using the right protocols, right? You know, back to Eric's point where he had, you know, the mosaic of all the different options, I can guarantee you not everybody's using the same protocol. So how do you get them all talking the same language so that the data is unified across the entire system? And at the bottom, the number one thing is security. No longer can we let security be the afterthought of any of this. It all has to be wrapped in an envelope of security, because data is the cornerstone of how we are making these buildings successful, how we're making our businesses successful, and anything that could jeopardize that data transfer and the transfer in those decisions will not be good for anybody. So thanks very much for the time, Nada. How we doing?
I had to let you go a minute over, so I'm probably going to get in trouble, but that's okay.
Thank you. So
there's a couple of things that I just want to wrap up with before we go to our next video here. And there's a comment that came in actually while Byron was speaking, but I think, you know, it's a theme that's sort of coming up too, is that idea of like interoperability, but also in particular, owners really need to play a direct role in setting the requirements and initiating the conversations between vendors. And I think that's kind of the key thing that, you know, you're sort of getting at here, right? Is it's, you know, owners do need to really, you know, you can't just rely on the vendors to drive those integrations and security. You need to have partners to help you with it, but the owner needs to, you know, ultimately needs to take responsibility for that and drive that conversation, I think, a lot more. So thanks so much, Jerry. We're going to catch up a little bit more at the end. And then just before we go into Vineet, we're going to have another intro video, another video from one of our sponsors from Johnson Controls before we go over to Vineet.
What defines a space or place? Is it stone or steel or walls? Is it how it makes us feel? Or is there something beyond? Johnson Controls, in collaboration with our customers and partners, is leading a fundamental transformation of how spaces and places are perceived and enjoyed. This transformation is taking us beyond buildings. Now, spaces have memory and identity. They become like ecosystems, balancing and responding to the flow of information, services, and people. A physical location becomes a kind of stage for digital amenities and learning opportunities. This is how a space comes alive. Spaces and places are opening up to new possibilities. This transformation has a name, Open Blue, a dynamic new space from Johnson Controls.
Certainly looking forward to learning more about that. So with that, Vineet Sinha, the VP of Open Blue at Enterprise Solutions with Johnson Control, is joining us. So over to you, Vineet, and we'll let you go through your slide deck and then we'll get into questions.
Sounds great. Thank you, Nada. And hello, everyone, and thank you for joining the webinar today. In my role as Vice President of Open Blue Enterprise Solutions at Johnson Controls, I have the privilege of working with customers around the globe in pursuit of their business goals with sustainable, smart, and healthy buildings. Johnson Controls obviously has a massive portfolio of offerings, right, for smart buildings, spanning building automation systems, equipment, fire security, etc. And our digital portfolio now includes both the Open Blue as well as the FM Systems portfolio, which helps us cover all major customer outcomes around energy efficiency and sustainability, smart facility management, integrated workplace management, and healthy buildings. Over the last 5 years, we have deployed our technology to thousands of buildings across the globe, enabling adoption of energy management, remote monitoring, condition-based maintenance, and enhanced operating efficiency solutions. Customers continue to pursue the next major frontier of adopting technology that will help them meet their carbon reduction goals, substitute expensive and hard to find labor, and then meet evolving needs of occupant productivity in their hybrid workplaces. All of this encompassing what is known as a smart building today. Our mission now is to accelerate that evolution to autonomous buildings, augmenting the volumes of data and insights on spaces and equipment with artificial intelligence, resulting in closed loop automation that can be executed at scale across an enterprise. When we think about integrations, the greatest value emerges when we intersect data from multiple sources to produce insights that are either tough or expensive to find with legacy technology. Just take the example of correlating weather normalized energy data with occupancy and indoor air quality, giving building managers the right levers to pull based on their tenant demands, certification needs, and regulatory mandates. So when customers are thinking about smart and cognitive spaces of the future, our discovery design and deployment plan factors in four key areas. Number one, which many of the speakers talked about, secure connectivity across both their modern and legacy subsystems. Second, creation of that clean data layer with tagging and normalization to power the suite of user-facing applications. The third, actual use cases, workflows, outcomes that are embedded in the applications and tailored for each user persona, which from our perspective can span a building operator, a maintenance technician, an energy manager, or even a senior executive. And very importantly, help our customers with training, job aids, best practices, and reference examples to drive change management in their own operations. I cannot emphasize enough on the importance of these last two pieces, right? Because end of the day, technology can take you so far, and you need a user adoption and value realization to maximize impact on business. So that takes me to the case study examples, right? Starting with the first one, which is a leading asset management company with a portfolio of diversified assets, including real estate infrastructure across 20 countries, right? So this is a customer that has a lot of systems today and is in the business on investing in their facilities, modernizing them, leasing them, and eventually reselling them. From their perspective, the greatest need was agility in their building operations. You know, be successful in meeting increasing expectations, both from their corporate leadership, as well as tenants, and plus add on regulatory and certification needs. Second, a much greater emphasis on sustainability with decarbonization, which was adding on to the pressure of managing energy costs. And third, with all of these buildings and for more insights, as they experienced densification of sensors, they also needed a robust technology stack that could protect against cyber threats and data breach events. So our solution here focused on using common, you know, the OpenBlue solution as a technology integration backbone, right? Bringing data from more than 10 building management systems, from a lot of different sensor platforms, other external data sources, help them establish KPIs and benchmark current performance, and then identify future operational performance and savings, right? This spans a lot of different systems in their buildings and has helped automate, simplify, and AI enable a lot of different processes across their portfolio. My next example, completely different type of facilities. Right now, we are not talking Class A office spaces or hotels or retail infrastructure. Right now, we are talking about a customer with a portfolio of warehouses, right, for industrial and logistics needs. Right now, these are really not well-sensorized buildings, nor do they use the most complex building management systems. So from their perspective, it was most important to have the right layer of technology using sensors, simplified unification methods, and have the right level of insights which could be used to still automate all of the data collection, monitoring, and reporting practices, right? Validation of utility bills, identification of energy conservation measures, and then pretty much create a template that could be deployed and scaled across each of their facilities. So importantly, as building owners, operators think about an efficient and cost-effective future, there are so many levers in their control. So thinking about day zero, day one needs is super important, but so is thinking about future-proofing those technology choices so your investments can stack up nicely to a productive future. The success of smart building implementations is now more than a technology challenge, right? It's the continued change management and adoption that can unlock several areas of value and prepare you for a future that will have a lot more artificial intelligence embedded in your day-to-day workflows. So that's all I had today. Nada, if we have the time, let's do questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Vineet. And you know, thanks for sharing, you know, a couple of different case studies that show a different level of scale, right? I think that's really important to, I think, for our audience to understand that there are applications that do make sense for industrial. So I wanted to start with, obviously, Johnson Controls being a major supplier of control systems and equipment buildings. You know, from looking at OpenBlue and from that perspective, you know, how do you think of connectivity to your own systems versus other providers? So coming back to that interoperability discussion.
Yeah. Thanks, Nado. Right. I mean, the Open and OpenBlue was designed to suggest that we will and will remain OEM agnostic, right? We have invested tremendously in our edge technologies, right? And like the previous speaker, right? I mean, we'll work with other solutions out there, right, which might exist in a building or can be used to simplify data aggregation. We also have a robust edge technology stack. And over the last 2 years, have made acquisitions like Tempered Networks and Foghorn AI that have helped us create an edge platform that supports a suite of protocols, establish the right level of cyber protection, and help stream data to the cloud where tagging and normalization can make it really easy for consumption, whether it's for first-party applications or third-party applications.
Okay, awesome. And then, you know, you talked about the technology platform, and obviously there's a lot of sensors and so on involved. So, yeah. And you just sort of touched a little bit on partners and vendors. So can you tell us a little bit more, like, about that network of partners that your customers can rely on?
Yeah. So we have been, working both with our in-house software teams as well as our partners to develop a suite of connectors. Today, we have over 100 as part of our library out of the box, right, which connect to a lot of different JCI variations and a lot of other third-party systems, sensor platforms, et cetera, right? And that will continue to be our mission, right? And we want to make it really simple for our customers, our partners, and in some cases, it even might be our competitors to embed some of this connectivity, right? End of the day, we are all here to serve our customers, right? So we have to all work customer back and plug in these systems in the right way to give them something that both delivers value and helps with speed to value.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I'd say as a customer, appreciate that because that is our reality. And there's, you know, we can't change everything in an existing building in one fell swoop. So that interoperability is so critical for us.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So I think we've got probably a little under 20 minutes to get into our full panel. So maybe if we can bring everyone else back in. And I will just, while we're getting everyone else back in, I will just acknowledge that the comment that I'd shared from the audience earlier will give credit to Michael McGee for that, just around that owners needing to play that role in setting requirements and so on. I'll start with a couple of questions that have come in from the audience. So the first one, Eric, for you, I just wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about this a little bit. And whether the mobile app that was developed for River South, if you can tell us a little bit about that and whether it was separate development and how you guys did that.
Sure. We were in a unique position, our equity partner on the project being Quadrio. A lot of you guys have heard from Quadrio and their team, their leaders in smart buildings, and have a large smart building platform. But they had developed their own app that we kind of white labeled as River South app. So their app is QR Plus, I believe, and it's a version of that that we used. It's been interesting. You know, we did do a lot of adjustments to it. Did some very cool things with the app that I think that get tenants excited. I tend to think of the app as kind of the bells and whistles that lease a building, and it really, you know, what makes their it's really about, you know, going after employees and trying to, you know, something that, you know, they want to be able to use the building with through their phones. And so we do some cool ones. One of them is, you know, through our occupancy sensors in our fitness center, from your desk, you can look on the app and see how many people are in there. And is it busier than normal, less busy than normal? And that's one of those things that during tenant leases, they're like, oh, that's cool, you know. And right. I don't know how much it's used right now. I mean, we probably can check, but it's very interesting what people kind of clamp onto as things that would be useful for them.
Right. No, that's interesting. And I mean, I will say, like, my phone is usually on my person, right? It's in my hand, it's in my pocket. Sometimes I don't want more things that make me use my phone, but certainly they're a huge convenience, I'm sure, for the occupants at River South. Another question that has come in, this one, Gary, is for you. Can you tell us a bit about the technologies that MRI is using for determining occupancy?
So occupancy, we use cameras, either our own installed cameras, or we leverage the existing CCTV security cameras that can be in situ. The reason we do that is we use cameras that are like an eye, and they will give you the highest accuracy, but most importantly, through our sort of validation process, it's the most consistent approach. So, and we use cameras to go down to, we even monitor our coffee machines in some of our offices just as a test, right? So we understand how long people are spending at the coffee machine, right? So for Dwell and you know, Vinit is smiling because he probably does, you know, something similar with some of his technology. So we can monitor your doors, we can monitor your floors, we can go down to desk level, we can go down to chair level. And I say, for a bit of a fun fact, we know how long it takes on average for people to make a cup of coffee in some of our offices. But it's camera based.
Okay, great. And so you are able to then bring in data and data sets from different, like, non-MRI systems. You're bringing those into your systems.
We built a platform called Agora where we can literally ingest data from anywhere. So, yeah, we've spoken today about lots of people on here have spoken about energy and about other BMS systems that can come in. All of those disparate data sets are easily integrated, overlaid, and then reported back on this sort of single Agora platform that we've established. So for exactly that reason, it's open. Yeah. It's just an open platform.
Okay, awesome. And I think that, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about with the panel was about data. So many different sources. I mean, Gary, obviously you just touched on it. Vinit talked about it. I think it's something we all, Jerry certainly, touched on this as well, like different data sources, different types of sensors, et cetera. So it's really foundational. You sort of have to organize it. You've got to structure it. Maybe you have to normalize nomenclature in your existing buildings. How do you reconcile that? So Byron, maybe I'll start with you. I mean, I know you guys are kind of a ground up developer, but you do also acquire assets, right?
Yeah.
So can you maybe walk us through your approach?
Yeah, I mean, before all that, you have to have a common ontology, right? You have to make sure that you are calling things as you see them as part of your business, right? And it's unique to every organization, right? People have their own ontology for their services. Commonly, we're trying to get, you know, there's a conversation of Project Haystack and all those things of people being able to provide that service and use that across the board. But for us, what happens is we make that decision of to acquire a property or an acquisition. Our team goes on site and kind of produces a report saying, this is what we think needs to happen. This is what's currently in the building. And how do we bring it up to a killer standard, right? And it happens with our teams, with engineering, security, IT, right? IT is part of that conversation. So that's kind of how we develop that to make sure that we're reaching that common goal for all of us. Because at the end of the day, somebody's going to operate it, right? Somebody's going to run it. We may have people who might relocate from another region in Kilroy to that new asset. So we want to make sure that we keep that consistency, not just for the operations team, but also for the infrastructure and our vendors. You have a bunch of common vendors across multiple regions. So you want to make sure that they're following the same process consistently.
Yeah, no, for sure. So important, right? And it's a, you know, I think that's one of those things that maybe can feel like it's a bit of grunt work at the front end. But it's one of those really critical things that will ultimately drive efficiency. Right.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess as you're doing that, and Jerry, maybe you can pick up on this, you know, what have you seen with some of your clients where, you know, you're starting to help them pull together some of that data? And, you know, how do you sort of go about that where it's like, okay, we've got to try and match different systems. Is there like, I mean, really what I want to know, can I ever get away with not having to clean all my data before I want to do something cool with it? That's really what I want to know in generalist terms.
I think it's going to depend on the technology providers, right? I try and make this as simple as possible, because if you just let it run wild, you can talk about it for the rest of your life, right? But if you look at the building itself, you know, it's really where your data sources are, right? And it's your controllers, your automation that's providing that data source, and you're getting it to a data destination where you're making those decisions. Back in the day when controllers and automation was mainly for the control and automation of the building, and data was the second, third, or even 10th thing for creation of that piece of hardware, yeah, you now have to take it through Haystack and normalize it and turn it into something that's really actionable, maybe when you're up at Gary's application level, right? But is Vineet and Linkspring and other automation vendors start making data, you know, number two behind security, of course, right? Number two behind security, you know, they're going to start doing some of that heavy lifting at the building edge, at the data source. So then you don't have to spend the heartbreaking hours trying to normalize everything before it gets to a Gary, right? It just comes delivered as the automation at the edge becomes more intelligent. And then long term, it's going to have to go the other way too, right? So when Gary and his AI start making all sorts of things happen, right, can he put that data in a presentable format that now the automation at the edge can read, right, and make those instantaneous decisions? So it's a great question,
right? So getting the information in and then being able to action it back out. Byron, go ahead.
Yes. At the conference that I was today, there was a comment that came out that said data is like crude oil, right? If you don't refine it, you can't make it work. And it was something that I didn't expect to hear at a controls conference, but it was great because that is true. If you're not refining the crude oil, if you're not making that data work for us, and we need to clean it up, right? We need to clean it up. And unfortunately, we have to do it. But yeah, I don't think we'll ever be able to just take it raw in its form.
Just to follow Byron on that, Nada, I'm glad you used that phrase, because I've used that phrase several times as we move data through our value chain, right? You can't pot crude oil in your vehicle, so you have to clean it, you have to refine it. And those checks and audit paths that happen in that process, and then, you know, how that then leads to a work order being raised and at the output, that's key, and we drive that through AI, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Vineet, I think you wanted to add in on this as well.
Yeah, just a quick one, right? I like to talk about data across like three S, right? Form, frequency, and function, right? You know, you marry those three attributes together and then you know how valuable it is, right? So I absolutely support what everyone else has been saying, right? And to Jerry's point, right, I mean, we have focused on building common data models at our BMS level as well as OpenBlue level, right, for exactly those purposes, right? Without that, we just cannot move fast enough.
Yep, fair enough. I'm going to circle back, actually, Vineet. There's something that was on one of your slides that I wanted to just touch on. So it was on that industrial around like automated tracking and validation of utility bills and corresponding energy conservation measures. So switching gears a little bit. Is that something that you guys are doing within industrial, like landlords, where a tenant might have that actual direct meter and that tenant would have the relationship with the utility?
Yeah, so we have all combinations, right, where the landlord has it, where a tenant has it, or where both of them have their respective metering, and then each of them need it for their respective scope one, scope two,
right.
You know, scope yeah. three type of reporting, right? So the system is configurable to set it up, and especially on that second case study, which is where you might have seen it, right? I mean, it is super critical for them because, you know, they have very few owned spaces and most of them are leased spaces, as you would imagine with warehouses, right? So it is an important use case to cover for us.
Okay, great. Now, just good to know, as the sustainability folks in the world are all buried and starting to get all their GRESB data together, it's, you know, an industrial warehouses, like that is a challenge for landlords in terms of pulling in that data. So it's just, you know, that was just personal for me, really. I wanted to know that one. I do want to talk about cybersecurity, and we've touched on it a few times. So maybe Eric, I'll come back to that tenant app and you know, cybersecurity, but then also privacy. Is that something, and I don't know if you got super involved in that or really close to it or not, is that a conversation that you had? And are there any questions that come up from tenants around, you know, what are you doing with my data and where does this go?
Yeah, absolutely. There have been. I'm not a tech guy. I'm an architect. I'm a recovering architect, actually. But I understand the need. And we've had, you know, we've got a law firm in here, international, one of the largest law firms in the country is one of our tenants. And they had the question. They own the devices and they own the phones of their employees, which is rare, I think, but they do in this case. And so they can tell their people whether or not they can install our tenant app. We didn't require it. Obviously, people have the choice to either use it or not. And what we found is they did. They let their employees use it. They enjoyed and wanted to use it. And so it was meaningful from a standpoint of operating the building and being tenants here. And so they did integrate and use them. They are using their phones and our tenant app. I can't really answer. We've kind of relied on a lot of our partners from a cybersecurity standpoint, but so it's a little out of my realm.
No, but I think that was a useful example though, right? If you've got a law firm that's, I would assume, gonna be pretty particular about it, and ultimately had their was willing to let their folks use it. So I think that's great. Byron, do you guys have an app as well? And do you want to comment on this?
Yeah, but I think overall it's the data chain of custody, right? That's what I'd like to say. It's how are you getting the data across from your building, your systems, to that secure connection, that cloud connection, that integration. I think when you see OT systems historically, it's not been the strong point, right? Most people want to make sure that the building is running, it's operating, and you're getting your set point set, right? You're getting your HVAC changing. As we start thinking about who can control that, right? That space is usually had to be in the building connected to a device. Now we're giving accessibility to that outbound. So you got to make sure that you're creating that moat around your building. You're creating that extra layer of security, that you're doing security in depth, right? So one of the big things is bringing IT components and IT processes and policies into the OT space, with the caveat that you might break something if you don't know what you're doing, but you should not say, I'm not going to do it because it's going to absolutely break my building, right? You should put in firewalls, you should put in switches, you should be doing, you know, MAC addressing if you have it. In some locations, you can't. I know in speaking with some of the different OEMs, they're talking about, you know, BACnet SC, they're talking about, you know, adding port configuration so that device that now sits on your BMS can now connect securely to your switches, without you as a network engineer having to make those changes on a daily basis. So the components are coming, the manufacturers are getting there, but you also have to train your vendors on that policy, right? As a landlord, we make sure that we take part of that on us, right? We are responsible for the switches. We are responsible for the firewalls. We're configuring and working the VLANs. So when that vendor comes in and it's going to install a camera, they're not worried about the cyber side. They're worried to make sure that my camera is going to work. It's going to be pointed in the correct locations. The analytics that they're valuing on there are going to be running. But my team is responsible for the security of the operations of the building. So I think that's the shift that we're seeing with the aggregation of, you know, the OEMs into the space and them picking up that we are going to be, because at the end of the day, if, you know, somebody gets hit and you're using a specific vendor, most people are going to say, well, that vendor has policy issues, security issues. We should probably not see them. And you'll start seeing that in the space if we don't move more quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's interesting seeing this shift, and it's still happening, right? I mean, I think, you know, for you, like, you guys are leaders in this space. There's still a lot of the industry that I think is kind of moving in the, you know, in the right direction, but there are still a lot of buildings out there where it's like, it's just about hitting the set points and they haven't really worked. They've thought about security, but haven't really actioned it yet, perhaps. And so I think there's a lot of work to do on that front. Jerry, I'm going to come to you. I think you probably want to jump in on a cybersecurity conversation.
Absolutely. And I, you know, a lot of Byron's topics were spot on. You know, when I try and break it down as simple as possible. And I'm in the camp of defined OT and IT, two separate, right? Yes, there's always the push to make them overlap, but there's also things that are very specific to OT and operability within the IT space. Now, Nada, you presented the question very interesting. You know, it was cybersecurity and privacy, right? Mm-hmm. To me, cybersecurity spans both sides, right? It's everything. You know, the entire ecosystem that, say, Eric and Byron have. The privacy side for me is more an IT space and more an IT function, right? Does anybody really care what the serial number is of a PLC and whether or not that's, no, not really, right? But if it's Byron's social security number, yeah, it's a big deal, right? But what I like to think is, you know, Eric's app that you mentioned is the user interface into an application, right? And these applications, much like Gary's, right? Or I think, Eric, you mentioned you're using Code Labs, and maybe that's where the app goes into, right? That's the data wall, so to speak. Right? From that data wall out to the user, absolutely. IT protocols, privacy concerns, Byron chain of custody, absolutely, 100%. When you go to the other side of the application, the side of the application that goes down to the buildings and to the automation, right? Engaging the controllers and other technologies that Vineet and Linkspring have, you know, there's a whole different set of cyber that needs to go in there as well. And the building owners, right, building managers and their partners that really understand those nuances are the ones that put together these exceptional systems and really make them hum. You don't have to be a recovering architect to figure it out, but if you know where to find the other smart guy in the room to help you with the privacy and cybersecurity, you can absolutely make a great team to make all this data work. The last piece I'll say on this is, the good news is a lot of the top applications that I've seen out in the industries are very IT capable. So much like when you log into your bank account or your credit card account and you get the little green lock in the top of your browser, you can do the same thing with a lot of these building management applications. And it's the exact same set of technologies, exact same set of security. So from that standpoint, it's a big thumbs up. It's how we go down that gets a little squirrely. So thanks for the time.
No, that's awesome. Chuck, do I have a minute to go to Vineet to just touch on cybersecurity as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, if you didn't, I was going there.
So Vineet, just wondering, you know, in your space at OpenBlue, how are you guys kind of tackling cybersecurity as you're, you know, rolling out programs with your customers?
Yeah, so not at the basics of, you know, data encryption and motion and rest, right? I mean, all of those are hygiene today, right? The acquisition that I mentioned earlier of Tempered Systems essentially, you know, gave us airwall capabilities. So like a firewall that can be programmed, layered onto our Edge solution, right? So that can help air gap those facilities and prevent any external unauthorized partners. I shouldn't say partners, right? Unauthorized, you know, folks from trying to get into those systems, right? I mean, we have seen enough of the vulnerabilities that OT systems have carried over the years and they have made a big splash, right? So obviously super critical for us as a company, right, to do that. Along with that, right, the second aspect I also wanted to cover was, right, how should building managers, operators think about this, right? How do they make the transition from operating or running a system that was connected through some legacy ways to a more modern way of connecting and using all of that data, right? And my word for that is simplification, right? If we look at our lives today, right, I mean, like working with the bank for today, for us today, is more of interfacing with one user, you know, user facing application, and I can do everything there. I no longer have to care about the 15 different forms or 20 different profiles in the bank that my father had to deal with, right?
Right.
Similarly, right, for the next generation of facility, you know, operators, building managers, it has to be about simplification, right? Like I like to say that the effectiveness of success of artificial intelligence is not going to happen just because of better machine learning models, but it's going to happen based on better user experiences. The more we can, you know, push complexity under the carpet, behind the layers, above the walls, et cetera, right? And make it simple for the user, that's what is going to, you know, help them make that transition.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's a perfect way for us to close out, is it's about keep it simple. Things don't change.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chuck, I'll let you close us out. Thanks, guys. Thanks to everybody for this great discussion, and certainly thanks to our audience for joining us. Over to you,
and
Chuck.
Thank you, Nada. Very, very nicely done balancing the conversation, and really appreciate your preparation. Thank you to all of our panelists. Your contributions are so valuable to all of the educational opportunities we bring to our RealCom followers, our live audience, our people who are watching this as a recording. I do want to point out real quickly, if you've joined us live or just watching this as a recording, thank you again for tuning in. Be sure to visit realcom.com to register for the RealCom IBCon event. It's happening June 20th and 21st, with pre-conference events starting on June 18th with a golf outing. Be sure to sign up for that. And on the 19th, you see something like this and there's Byron. Imagine that. You see this smarter connected buildings forum. It's going to be one of the largest smart building conferences in the world. So you definitely don't want to miss that. A lot of great information, great discussion. Those conferences cannot be understated. So please do check on the website at realcom.com, get registered. That's it for us today. We wish you well and be safe. Thank you.
Thank you.